everyone, and welcome to the Rural Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Albrecht with Ag Country Farm Credit Services. We have a very special guest on today, U.S. Congressman Colin Peterson, who represents Minnesota's 7th District. Welcome to the program, Congressman Peterson.
Glad to be here.
There are a whole host of political issues happening within the world of agriculture today, but let's start off by talking about the Farm Bill. You have served in Washington, D.C. since 1991. I think it's safe to say that you've been a part of a few farm bills. Is there anything about the current process that stands out to you that's different from the past?
Well, it kind of started in 2013 when we had the same issue take down the Farm Bill. For the first time in history, the Farm Bill failed on the floor of the House. Now they brought that issue back into the bill, even though I had warned them against it. And as I predicted, it caused the bill to fail again. Now, I don't know what's going to happen. They might be able to twist enough arms to get people to pass the bill on a partisan basis, but the Senate is not going to do this. And that's what I don't understand about this strategy. Why they're doing this when they know the Senate's not going to do it. Mitch McConnell said the Senate Farm Bill will not have any new work requirements, which on our side, Conaway told me it was a non-negotiable. It had to be in there. Well, I don't get it. So why they're going off on an ideological binge that's got no chance of success, I don't understand. But there's a lot of stuff going on right now in D.C. I don't really understand.
Well, given the challenging circumstances within the ag economy, how important do you feel it is to pass a new farm bill compared to potentially extending the current law?
You know, right now the prices look better again. We have survived the last 2 years because of big yields. I've been concerned about what's going to happen this year, given the rocky start to the growing season. Right now the prices, you know, are not too bad, and I'm sure there's farmers out there locking in some of these better prices, you know, to whatever extent they dare do it. But, you know, the bill that's being considered is really a continuation of the current law. You know, so there isn't a whole lot of difference between extending it or doing this bill. There's two things. One is the farmers that picked the ARC, which was majority of them, as I told them at the time, you're going to get money for a couple of years and then you're not going to get any money, which is what happened. And so now they want to switch. And so they can't switch to PLC unless we have a new bill. So that's one of the issues. The other issue is dairy. I try to tell the Senate to gave them the language to go to $9 margin. They didn't listen, and they went to $8 margin, and they raised the catastrophic from 4 million to 5 million pounds, which is the opposite of what I told them to do. So people are going to get, under the current law, are going to get payments this year under the new dairy thing, but it's only because they made it retroactive. If they hadn't made it retroactive, they wouldn't get any payments. And it's kind of like being able to buy insurance on your house after it burned down. It's not a good precedent to set. But what I'm concerned about is that we're having a very slow sign up. I think less than half of the people so far have signed up. And it ends on Friday, I guess. So what's going to happen is, you know, maybe they'll extend that too, but people are going to sign up. They're guaranteed to get money out of this. What I'm worried about is a lot of people aren't going to sign up. They're going to find out they could have got money, and they didn't. And then they're going to buy next year at $8, and there's not going to be any money next year at $8. So, I mean, so the safety net for the small guys needs to be $9. And at $9, it would have worked. And it could be done with no extra money as long as you keep the catastrophic at $4 million. So that's in the House bill. So those two things and the increase in CRP acres are probably the only things that are really in the bill that are different than the current law. So if we extend the thing, not the end of the world, you know.
You have spoken about the growing challenges to passing farm legislation given the declining population of rural legislators. What do you see as the future of legislation relating to agriculture?
Well, there's 45 of us that have farm districts, and out of 435. So we can't pass a farm bill by ourselves. And the city people do not understand what we do. And the right-wingers get pulled off in one direction. The left-wingers get pulled off in another direction on farm legislation. The way we've been able to keep this together is by adding food stamps into it. So the urban people get food stamps. We get a farm bill. And neither side questions the other very much. What's broken down this time is that we've got people questioning food stamps, you know, in a way that a lot of the urban people don't agree with. So I don't know. I don't know how you do a farm bill without the nutrition part of it being in there. But we might find out. We'll see what happens.
Another major pressing issue within agriculture is trade. All eyes within different sectors of the farming world are watching how this administration handles these matters with foreign countries. What are your general feelings when it comes to free trade?
Well, trade has been good for agriculture. We benefited from these trade agreements that hurt a lot of people in manufacturing. And that's what Trump used to get elected. Now he's following through on his promises. And when we benefited before because jobs went overseas, now when he's talking about it's going to hurt us if they end up doing this. So I cannot tell you what he's going to do. It changes every day. All I can tell you is that what's being talked about makes farmers very nervous. It's hurt our markets already. You know, pork has already got a tariff on it. So it's not helpful what's going on. You know, that the TPP was a good thing for agriculture. It should not have been scrapped, in my opinion. And I don't know that you can get that back. So, you know, their trade agenda is schizophrenic, and I can't tell what they're up to. And hopefully they will do minimal damage before they get done here.
Are you optimistic that this administration will be able to successfully renegotiate NAFTA?
Well, it depends on what you mean by successfully renegotiate. Canadians will not give up their dairy system. And that anybody that knew anything about it would have known that before you started. The only thing in my district that's affected is sugar. We have an agreement in place, a temporary agreement, suspension agreement, to take care of the dumping that was going on. We'd like to have that permanent. So that's one thing that could happen. But frankly, it looks to me like whatever comes out of this NAFTA negotiation is more likely to harm agriculture than to help it. But again, we don't know what they're up to, what's going to be in there. It changes from day to day, too, so it's hard to know.
I'm guessing there's very little doubt that you're hearing from constituents on this issue. What are they saying?
Well, they don't know what to think. They're nervous. You know, they are afraid this administration is going to screw things up. And they were on the route to do that until a bunch of people complained, and then they shifted course. And then they shifted course again, and then they shifted course again. And so, you know, who knows what they're going to do. But my message to them is do no harm. You know, don't screw up what we've been able to put in place. And if you can get something else besides that, more power to you, but don't screw up what we have.
We are speaking with U.S. Congressman Colin Peterson of Minnesota. Congressman, you're nearing almost 3 decades in Congress. Have you put much thought into what type of legacy you would like to leave someday?
I just want to survive at this point. You know, I mean, I've been able to carve out a niche in agriculture. I think I am respected across the country in agriculture, and I guess that's as good a legacy as you can have. The fact that, you know, I have as many Republicans in Congress listen to me as Democrats, you know, in terms of my work on the committee. So, you know, it's given me the opportunity to become somewhat of an expert, I guess, on agriculture and have some credibility, and that's good enough legacy for me. For a farm kid from Baker, Minnesota, that, you know, thought he would never amount to anything. So.
Absolutely. You have been able to overcome at least 3 large Republican waves over your time in office. The first in the mid-90s, the second really the Tea Party movement in 2010, and now, most recently, the Trump wave. What do you attribute your continued election success to?
I just work hard. I I think the thing that served me very well is I tell people exactly what I think. I'm pretty blunt, and people know that, and I don't varnish things. And people know when I say something, they're not getting BS. And they like that, you know, especially in this day and age. So people know where I stand. They know how I'm going to approach issues. They're comfortable with it. I have a lot of Republican support in addition to Democratic support and independent support. And I think it's because even though they may not like what I have to say, I tell them what I think is the truth. And that's what people want. They want to know what's going on.
And that's a good segue into my next question. You helped create the Blue Dog Coalition in the House. For those listening along who are unsure of what that means, it usually means a group of moderate to conservative Democrats. You're known also for crossing over party lines. In fact, you were rated the most conservative Democrat in the last Congress by YouGov. Do you feel that bipartisanship really is becoming a thing of the past?
Well, I think at the time, for right now, it is, kind of. But I think it'll change. You know, it ebbs and flows. But it's what the voters are sending to Washington. They're sending, and it's because of, to some extent, because of the reapportionment that has gone on. 390 of these districts have no challenge from the other party. And so a lot of these people never talk to anybody in the other party. And it causes a very polarizing situation. And, you know, it'll change and it'll, you know, morph into something different. But for right now, it's pretty partisan.
Given your bipartisan approach, what role do you feel you can play in crafting legislation within both parties?
Well, I try to be helpful when I think it makes sense. I just won an award a week ago as being the most bipartisan member of the Congress, either House or Senate, not because of my voting record, but because of the bills that I had co-sponsored. And I was a co-sponsor with Republicans more, you know, and vice versa, more than anybody else in Congress. And a part of that is that when Republicans are looking for somebody to co-sponsor a bill, I think I'm probably the first person they come and talk to. And if I think it makes sense, I sign on to it. So, you know, I'm trying to do what I can to foster a bipartisan, sensible solution to things. But we have people in Congress that just, you know, don't want to take yes for an answer, if you will. So I don't know. It'll change. It'll get better. But right now, it's pretty polarized.
What's the one thing you're most proud of during your time in office?
I think the thing that I'm the most proud of is the work that we're able to do for our constituents at the individual level. People don't see that work. You know, we have tremendous staff out here that works in our offices. And you should see the pile of letters I've got over the last 30 years from people where we've been able to fix things that were a significant problem for them or their family or whatever. And letters from people that say, I can't believe you're able to get this done and so forth. So I think it's just that kind of stuff that I've been able to do over the years, along with my staff, to help people deal with the government, deal with problems that come up. Legislation, you know, comes and goes. And, you know, I mean, I got accolades for the 2008 Farm Bill. Now nobody can even remember it, you know. So that comes and goes. But being able to help people on a personal level, I think, is the most satisfying thing of the job.
Outside of the current Farm Bill, are there any issues you still want to tackle?
Well, because of my position in the Congress, I get kind of wrapped up in all the ag stuff, you know. But I would say I've been working with Dave Baker here in Wilmer on this opioid stuff. That's something that's really troubling and it's really hurt a lot of people. So I've been doing what I can at the federal level to try to deal with that. I've spent a lot of time over my years helping our small rural hospitals and continue to do that because without these little hospitals in these communities, the communities aren't going to survive. You know, so, you know, I work on, a lot of it is rural issues because I have a rural district, a lot of small towns. You know, Wilmer's the second biggest town, Moorhead's the biggest. You know, Wilmer and Moorhead are going to survive. They got good staff, they got good structure. But you get these little tiny towns, you know, they don't have, you know, part-time mayor, they don't have any staff. And so we do a lot of work trying to help them, you know, maintain their community, their water system, their wastewater treatment plants, their hospital or school, whatever it is. And that's something that I've enjoyed being part of.
And finally, what's your parting message to those listening along about the state of agriculture and rural America?
We're going through a tough time, I think, to some extent. It's nothing like the 80s at this point, but it has the potential of getting there. We have the best farmers in the world, you know, in the United States. And what we're going to try to do at our level in Washington is provide them with a safety net, with crop insurance and other ways for them to be able to stay in business so that we can have family farm-based agriculture and not corporate-based agriculture, which they have in a lot of the rest of the world. So I'm optimistic. We're going through a little bit of a downturn, but if we can get these trade agreements straightened out, get them back on track, 95% of the people that need to eat don't live in the United States, so we need to tap into those markets, and that's where the future is going to be.
Congressman, thank you very much for stopping by and speaking with us today.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
That's U.S. Congressman Colin Peterson, who represents Minnesota's 7th District. That's a wrap for this episode of the Rural Perspectives Podcast, which is a production of Ag Country Farm Credit Services. To get more great content, please visit www.agcountry.com.